Chapter 6. Alternatives. Distortions versus reality. What is the true potential of alternatives? Here's where we are. The purpose of this part of the book is to understand the full benefits of continuing fossil fuel use. In Chapter 4, we saw that the current benefits of fossil fuels are not, contrary to our knowledge system, trivial to the livability of our world. Fossil fuels, by providing the ultra-cost-effective energy that radically increases humanity's productive ability via ultra-cost-effective machine labor and enormous amounts of freed-up mental labor, as well as uniquely versatile fossil fuel materials, in fact make our world unnaturally livable. In Chapter 5, we saw that fossil fuels' unique ability to provide ultra-cost-effective energy, which our anti-impact, anti-energy knowledge system either denies or has zero interest in, is due to a combination of its remarkable natural attributes and an unrivaled amount of economic innovation and achievement that has been applied to those specific attributes. And we saw that fossil fuels' unique ability can grow significantly to empower billions more people for the indefinite future. We saw that the challenge of competing with fossil fuels is very steep in electricity, but far steeper in the realms of industrial heat and mobility, where the direct burning of fossil fuels has often proved far more cost-effective than electricity, and in some cases, such as heavy-duty transport, undoable by electricity. The implication of all this for alternatives is that they are starting from a hugely inferior competitive position to fossil fuels, which means that partially replacing, let alone totally replacing, fossil fuels in the near future would require completely unprecedented breakthrough economic achievements and is most likely for nuclear energy the only alternative that can match and even exceed fossil fuels' combination of natural storage, natural concentration, and natural abundance. With this context in mind, we can now fully answer the question, what is the comparative ability of fossil fuels versus alternatives to produce the ultra-cost-effective energy that the world needs far more of? There are 5 hypothetical answers, each with different implications for policy. 1. Alternatives to fossil fuels, which currently provide 20% of the world's energy, will continue to be modest supplements. 2. Alternatives to fossil fuels will become more significant supplements to meet increasing global energy needs, providing, say, 30% of the world's energy in a world that increasingly uses far more energy. Under this hypothetical scenario, fossil fuel use would still increase, just less slowly than alternatives would. 3. In a radical departure from current reality and trends, alternatives to fossil fuels will become partial replacements for fossil fuels, providing so much cost-effective energy, there is actually a decline in fossil fuel use despite growing energy needs. 4. In a radical departure from the way any energy economy has ever worked, alternatives will rapidly become total replacements for fossil fuels, supplying all the energy fossil fuels provide today, plus all the additional energy that will be needed by an empowering world. 5. Even more extreme than the previous scenario, the alternatives considered green, solar, wind, biomass, and geothermal, but no large-scale hydro and no nuclear, can alone become total replacements for fossil fuels. Given what we know about the difficulty of competing with fossil fuels' secret sauce of remarkable natural attributes, harnessed ultra-cost-effectively through generations of economic innovation and achievement, our extremely strong baseline expectation over the next 30 years should be scenarios 1 or 2, with 3 being incredibly improbable, 4 being virtually impossible, and 5 being total crackpot. To elaborate, we should expect that there is virtually no possibility for scenario 3. Alternatives are near-term partial replacements for fossil fuels in a world that needs far more energy. And the idea of scenario 4 a total replacement of fossil fuels for both today's energy and tomorrow's increasing energy needs should be viewed as virtually impossible. Scenario 5, a total green replacement of fossil fuels, should be viewed as a total crackpot idea until definitively proved otherwise. And yet, our knowledge system goes beyond what I am calling this total crackpot idea and tells us that in less than 30 years, fossil fuels can not only be totally replaced, but also surpassed by exclusively green alternatives, providing all the energy the world needs at even lower cost than fossil fuels. For example, a group of prominent academics and other influential people calling themselves the Global 100% Renewable Energy Strategy Group says, numerous studies have investigated 100% renewable energy, and they have found that it works, not only for providing electricity, but also for providing all energy. A transformation to 100% renewable energy can occur faster than current expectations. The power sector can transform by 2030, and the other sectors soon thereafter. The total energy cost of a 100% renewable energy system will be lower than the cost of conventional energy. A 100% renewable energy system can supply regions, countries, and the world reliably 24/7 with energy at low cost. While we should always be open to evidence that some unprecedented breakthrough is actually underway, we also know that we have an anti-energy knowledge system that routinely distorts the evidence about alternatives to fossil fuels to rationalize its support of fossil fuel elimination policies, as well as nuclear and hydro elimination policies. Is that happening here? Let's find out. The incredible claims of our anti-energy knowledge system. Could our knowledge system be right in its incredible claims that exclusively green energy can rapidly replace fossil fuels in 30 years or less, in providing the increasing amount of energy the world needs, despite fossil fuels' huge head start of natural storage, natural concentration, and natural abundance, harnessed ultra-cost effectively through generations of economic innovation and achievement? Again, our baseline expectation should be absolutely no. And any survey of incredible claims about green or renewable energy reinforces that expectation, because such claims invariably involve three definitive signs of distortion by the anti-impact framework that our knowledge system operates on. 1. They embrace the anti-impact, anti-flourishing goal of reducing energy use. 2. They insist on green, that is, low-impact, alternatives, while expressing little concern about the anti-impact opposition to these alternatives. 3. They deny the unique cost-effectiveness of fossil fuels today. The first two reveal that our knowledge system has an anti-impact, anti-energy idea of what it means to replace fossil fuels. The third reveals that our anti-impact knowledge system is once again willing to distort reality to advance its anti-impact, anti-energy policies. They embrace the anti-impact, anti-flourishing goal of reducing energy use. Look at proposals to replace fossil fuels and notice that you invariably see calls for less energy use, often using the term efficiency. For example, the 100% renewable energy proposal mentioned earlier calls for increasing energy efficiency on all levels. One of the authors, Mark Jacobson, writes elsewhere, "The lowest hanging fruit for solving global warming plus air pollution is reducing energy use." As I discussed in Chapter 5, there is no plausible increase in the efficiency of machines that would change the fact that global energy use needs to significantly increase if billions more people are to have the opportunity to flourish. If the empowered world is to become more prosperous, and if new types of machine labor, especially new ways of amplifying human intelligence, are going to reach their full potential. any proposal to replace fossil fuels that doesn't focus front and center on the need for more energy is not actually trying to replace what fossil fuels can do from a human flourishing perspective. They are trying to replace fossil fuels with something that impacts nature far less. And the less energy the replacement involves, the better. They insist on green, that is, low-impact alternatives, while expressing little concern about the anti-impact opposition to these alternatives. When you are talking about replacing the world's only source of ultra-cost-effective energy with alternatives, you want all alternatives at your disposal. And yet, today's calls for replacing fossil fuels insist on just green or renewable alternatives, which usually exclude most hydroelectric energy as well as nuclear energy, the only form of raw energy that combines the natural storage, natural concentration, and natural abundance that characterize fossil fuels. Even if you think that solar and wind are super promising, there is no reason whatsoever to be hostile to nuclear. And yet today's movement to replace fossil fuels with green energy is incredibly hostile to nuclear. This strongly suggests that their ultimate goal is not advancing human flourishing through expanding ultra-cost-effective energy, but eliminating human impact. In this case, the impact of hydro on rivers and the unnatural impact of nuclear radiation and waste, even though these are totally masterable safety-wise. The goal of eliminating human impact explains why, as I discussed in Chapter 1, even within the advocacy for solar, wind, and batteries, there is little concern about increasing global opposition to these technologies' impact on nature, which is resulting in restrictions on mining, transmission lines, and the building of solar and wind farms. Once again, when our knowledge system talks about replacing fossil fuels, it is not trying to replace them with something as good or better from a human flourishing perspective. It's trying to replace them with something far better at eliminating human impact, which means replacing them with much less energy. Anyone whose concept of replacing fossil fuels morally embraces far less energy use cannot be trusted on the question of whether an alternative can actually replace fossil fuels in providing the far more energy use the world needs from a human flourishing perspective. They deny the unique cost-effectiveness of fossil fuels today. As a rule, we should only take seriously predictions by those who ruthlessly acknowledge the past and present. And claims that green energy can replace fossil fuels almost universally ignore or deny the reality of green energy today. For example, the public statement I quoted earlier says nothing about the actual state of energy today, where renewables play a relatively tiny role, nor does it say anything about fossil fuels' remarkable natural properties, nor does it say anything about the generations of economic innovation and achievement by millions of people that it took to build our current energy system. To the contrary, it calls for a massive redesign of the global energy system to be done by a handful of people, not acknowledging that the current unprecedented state of affairs came from millions of people cooperating and competing with trial and error in the real world, not from some top-down academic designer who figured out everything in advance. A knowledge system that makes incredible predictions about the future, while ignoring or denying the reality of the present, cannot be trusted. This doesn't tell us what the potential of alternatives going forward is. It just tells us that our knowledge system is guaranteed not to give it to us. Thus, to know the true potential of alternatives, we need an assessment of the state of alternatives on a human flourishing framework, one that values cost-effective energy and advancing human flourishing versus seeking to sacrifice these to the goal of eliminating human impact on nature. In this chapter, I will provide such an assessment. For each major proposed alternative to fossil fuels, I will give the actual evidence of its potential, starting with an understanding of its current reality and limitations, then examining the evidence for any breakthroughs. I will frequently point out our knowledge system's distortions so you can understand why the reality and potential of various alternatives is so different from what the knowledge system tells us. As I will show, the evidence is clear that while there are some exciting alternatives, including one with extreme long-term, several generations or more from now, promise, as a replacement, fossil fuels are irreplaceable for the foreseeable future and need to be expanded if we are to empower the world and pursue global human flourishing. We will see that excited claims about green alternatives are wild distortions by a movement that actually opposes all forms of energy in proportion to their cost effectiveness, a movement that therefore is holding back not only fossil fuels, but real long-term alternatives to fossil fuels. With that preview, let's look at the alternatives, starting with the ones our knowledge system claims are most promising, solar and wind. The current denied reality of solar and wind energy. The terms solar energy and wind energy refer to energy, almost exclusively electricity, produced using direct sunlight or the wind, which is mainly caused by sunlight heating different parts of the atmosphere to different degrees. Most solar energy is what is called solar photovoltaic, abbreviated as solar PV, the technology involved in solar panels. Solar PV generates electricity through a phenomenon discovered around 1839 by Edmund Becquerel called the photovoltaic effect, by which certain materials emit electrons when hit by light. Through extremely impressive, precise feats of engineering, solar PV can generate electricity when it is exposed to sunlight. Concentrated solar power, CSP, which is much less popular than solar PV, concentrates sunlight into heat, much as a child with a magnifying glass does when they use the sun to ignite a dried leaf. Using, in effect, a massive array of magnifying glasses, in this case mirrors, CSP concentrates sunlight into heat, which can then be used to turn an electricity-generating turbine, much as fossil fuel power plants do. Wind energy harnesses wind, turning the blades of a wind turbine, which are connected to a generator that converts the wind's energy into electric current. Solar and wind energy are the basis of every prominent proposal to end fossil fuel use and/or achieve net zero emissions by 2050 or earlier. But as I've emphasized repeatedly, the current reality of solar and wind is that after many decades on the market, they produce 3% of the world's energy. Almost all of that is electricity. They have no current competition with many of fossil fuels' mobility-related or industrial heat-related uses. This means that for them to be a total replacement for fossil fuels, they would not just need to rapidly take over virtually all of electricity generation, they would need to make electricity generation far, far lower cost so that it could outcompete direct burning of fossil fuels for industrial heat. And on top of that, someone would need to cost-effectively mass-produce a wide variety of heavy-duty non-oil transportation machines, such as hydrogen airplanes and cargo ships, that are at the radically inferior prototype stage, all in less than 30 years. This is about as far-fetched as you can get. But, say solar and wind champions, there's an unprecedented revolution underway that should make us dispense with all our preconceptions. Solar and wind will become so amazingly cheap at generating electricity that electricity will become cost-effective for everything, including synthesizing hydrogen fuel to power hydrogen planes, despite the fact that currently, as I observed in Chapter 5, direct burning of fossil fuels is by far the lowest cost way of synthesizing hydrogen fuel, and that hydrogen planes do not exist on the market at any price. Solar and wind champions support their claims of incredible breakthroughs by citing two seeming pieces of evidence. One is that solar and wind adoption is growing rapidly. This is true to a point. While solar and wind are a small percentage of energy use, they were growing at 20.1% and 11.5% in 2020, respectively. If that growth rate continues, the argument goes, we will soon be using solar and wind for virtually all our energy. But history shows us that in business, it's very common for something to have a temporarily rapid rate of growth when its base is small and then taper off as it grows. The fact that a new clothing brand goes from 1,000 shirts in a year to 2,000 the second year to 4,000 the third year does not mean that the number will keep doubling and reach 524 million by the 20th year. What makes us think that solar and wind will keep growing and growing and growing? The second reason cited, falling prices. We see constant headlines about solar and wind already falling to prices that are cheaper than nuclear, cheaper than coal, cheaper than gas. The Guardian tells us coal is on the way out. Study finds fossil fuel now pricier than solar or wind. According to the New York Times, solar and wind energy start to win on price versus conventional fuels. And we're told these prices will keep falling, leaving conventional electricity sources in the dust. Such claims often involve impressive-sounding terminology such as grid parity and lower-levelized cost of electricity, but they fly in the face of two hard facts. One is that solar and wind exist in large quantities, exclusively in places where they are given massive government preferences. When you look at where solar and wind are used, you will invariably find subsidies, that is, the government forcing taxpayers to give money to solar and wind companies. Often, governments actually mandate a certain percentage of solar and wind by law, a practice often called renewable portfolio standards. This is suspicious. Why do solar and wind always seem to need subsidies and mandates if the costs are so low? This leads us to the second fact. Contrary to claims of lower costs, the places that use the most solar and wind on their grid tend to have the highest electricity costs. For example, leaders in solar and wind, such as Germany and Denmark, have 3 to 4 times the electricity prices as the U.S., and in the U.S., prices are highest in areas with the most solar and wind. Why do solar and wind seem to always make electricity more expensive if they're actually so cheap? All is clear once we recall a key principle discussed in Chapter 5. The full cost of energy is determined by the cost of the full process necessary to produce it. The full process of producing electricity from solar and wind, far from being a revolution of unprecedented low cost, is currently not remotely cost-effective compared with fossil fuels due to two aspects of sunlight and wind's nature that energy producers have been unable to overcome: their diluteness and their intermittency. The costs of diluteness. Whereas fossil fuels are naturally concentrated stores of energy, sunlight and wind are naturally dilute flows of energy. To be dilute is to have a low energy density, to contain not much energy in a given amount of volume or mass. The diluteness of wind and solar means they necessarily take a lot more land to harness the same amount of energy than fossil fuels or nuclear do. They also use a lot of resources. For example, solar and wind involve mining-intensive resources known as rare earth elements. These are not actually rare in the ground, but they are rare in the sense of existing dilutely in the ground, meaning they require a lot of mining per unit extracted. Building solar and wind electricity generation requires 10 times more mined materials than building fossil-fueled electricity generation. Diluteness, in addition to driving large land and materials costs, also leads to other significant costs of solar and wind that are rarely considered: long-distance transmission infrastructure costs. Because solar and wind require large amounts of land, often far from population centers, they require new, costly, long-distance transmission lines that carry enormous amounts of electricity across long distances. These lines also increase risks associated with electricity, such as wildfires. The costs of diluteness, land, materials, and long-distance transmission infrastructure are a major challenge to the cost-effectiveness of solar and wind. Those challenges are drastically compounded by the most significant cost-effectiveness challenge of solar and wind, their natural intermittency. The costs of intermittency. An essential aspect of electricity is extreme controllability. The electrical grid needs to be able to provide industrial and residential users with electricity on demand, whenever they need it and in whatever quantities they need it in. The problem with the sun and the wind in this regard is that unlike fossil fuels, which are naturally stored and thus easily available on demand, sunlight and wind are intermittent. They are available only sometimes in quantities dictated not by human needs, but by nature, often in total contradiction to what human beings need. For example, as residents of Texas experienced during the catastrophic blackouts of February 2021, the wind that their enormous numbers of wind turbines need to function doesn't blow very much when it is very cold. It also doesn't blow very much when it is very hot, which contributed to a lack of wind electricity in summer 2020 that helped cause blackouts in California. Solar's availability also often contradicts human needs. In many regions, it is least available when temperatures are very cold and begins to rapidly disappear in the late afternoon and early evening when household electricity use is highest. Solar and wind's intermittency creates a major process problem, the problem of transforming a highly uncontrollable electricity input into a highly controllable electricity output. That means any sunlight or wind-based process, if it is to be part of a reliable on-demand electricity system, always requires paying for the cost of some controllable energy source to replace it when there is little to no sun and wind, or to supplement it anytime there is less than needed. There are three approaches in theory to doing this. One, relying on some controllable source of energy, such as fossil fuels. Two, relying on a diverse, distant, and enormous network of solar panels and wind turbines, so there is always sufficient electricity from somewhere. Or three, relying on a man-made storage system to store enough intermittent energy to always be able to meet demand. The current reality of solar and wind is that none of these approaches has yet proven cost-effective, and only approach one, relying on some controllable source of energy, such as fossil fuels, has been implemented at any cost. Acknowledging and understanding this current reality is essential to understanding whether there are any breakthroughs that will dramatically change it going forward. Why isn't it cost-effective to use intermittent solar and wind while relying on some controllable source of energy? Consider the case of Germany, long considered a leader in solar and wind, and, not coincidentally, home of some of the empowered world's highest electricity prices. On some days, Germany's solar panels and wind turbines generate less than 5% of needed electricity. Because intermittent solar and wind can go to near zero for extended periods of time, solar and wind infrastructure in Germany and elsewhere does not replace existing controllable energy infrastructure. It forces consumers to pay for both controllable energy infrastructure and uncontrollable energy infrastructure. In the case of Germany, much of the controllable energy infrastructure is coal infrastructure. As Germany has paid tens of billions of dollars to subsidize solar panels and wind turbines, fossil fuel infrastructure capacity, especially coal, has not been shut down. It has barely decreased. And even that small decrease in coal capacity has created major concerns about reliability problems when Germany's few remaining nuclear reactors are scheduled to shut down at the end of 2022. Here's an easy question. What's more expensive, a 100% controllable energy infrastructure plus a massive intermittent energy infrastructure, or just a 100% controllable energy infrastructure? Obviously, the first. Is it any wonder that the more solar and wind a country uses, the higher its costs? The massive infrastructure duplication costs of intermittent solar and wind are compounded by a further cost problem with solar and wind's dependence on controllable, usually fossil-fueled, power plants, a decrease in the fuel efficiency of the controllable power plants. To the extent a grid is committed to using solar and wind, whenever sunlight or wind increases, the grid has to cycle down controllable power plants. And whenever sunlight or wind decreases or disappears, it has to cycle up controllable power plants. Rapidly cycling power plants up and down is an efficiency killer, just as stop-and-go traffic kills your car's fuel efficiency. The infrastructure duplication costs and fuel inefficiency costs caused by solar and wind's reliance on controllable energy sources is the dominant reason why the more solar and wind you use, the higher your costs are. The reality of solar and wind around the world is that they are not outcompeting fossil fuels in the realm of electricity. They are making electricity powered by fossil fuels and other controllable sources of electricity, nuclear and hydro, more expensive. This reality leads to a frequent additional negative consequence: declining reliability. The reason is simple. Governments seeking to lessen the large price increases that come with more solar and wind are trying to get away with fewer controllable power plants as backup. This is a game of reliability chicken that many areas of the U.S. are losing, with disastrous consequences. In the summer of 2020, California, after shutting down several natural gas and nuclear power plants in recent years, experienced widespread blackouts because there wasn't enough controllable capacity available in the region during the evening hours of a heat wave, when both solar and wind were unavailable. In the winter of 2021, Texas, after subsidizing and mandating wind at the expense of building, maintaining, and weatherizing controllable power plants, had a massive shortfall of supply that, compounded by major operating errors by the grid, caused statewide blackouts for days. Solar and wind are not, contrary to our knowledge system, proving to be a scalable replacement for ultra-cost-effective fossil fuel energy. They are proving to be a cost-adding, reliability-decreasing supplement, and just for electricity at that. The true potential of solar and wind energy. The dreadful reality of solar and wind today doesn't 100% prove that no breakthroughs are imminent, but it means that someone who is claiming that what is today a cost-adding, reliability-decreasing supplement to fossil fuel electricity will soon become a cost-decreasing replacement for all fossil fuel energy had better offer the evidence of a lifetime. Unfortunately, our knowledge system and its solar and wind champions do not offer anything resembling such evidence, as we should now expect, given the nature and track record of our anti-impact knowledge system. They instead offer more distortions, namely: 1. Denial of the reality of today's current small-scale solar and wind electricity. 2. Reliance on non-existent economic achievements, such as ultra-cost-effective multi-day electricity storage. Denial of the reality of today's current small-scale solar and wind electricity. I would entertain a prediction of a solar and wind revolution if the predictor acknowledged the reality of the present by saying something like the following: the government subsidizing and mandating of solar and wind has caused massive destruction around the world. Solar and wind, while sometimes good for remote locations that need very little electricity, have been a disaster when applied to the massive and dynamic electricity needs of the empowered world. Adding wasteful, unreliable solar and wind infrastructure to the grid has increased costs and decreased reliability, harming people and industry wherever it has been used, to the extent it has been used. But I have shocking evidence that there are some unimaginable breakthroughs that will cause this destructive energy parasite to become a superior substitute. I know you have no reason to believe this, but here's the evidence. This would be worth entertaining, but this is not what we get. Instead, without any exceptions that I have found, predictions of a solar and wind revolution portray solar and wind as superior competitors already and project them to become even more superior. Bloomberg, a big booster of such predictions, in 2020 told us that solar and onshore wind power are now the cheapest new sources of electricity in at least two-thirds of the world's population, further threatening the two fossil fuel stalwarts, coal and natural gas. This is a denial of reality. Such denials always involve some form of what I call partial cost accounting, not taking into account the full costs of solar and wind. Always remember that energy production is a process that involves not just accessing raw energy, but transforming it into usable on-demand energy. For all the reasons I've given, solar and wind are cost-adding, reliability-decreasing parasites that are nowhere close to being able to power a grid on their own. The only way to claim lower costs is to only look at partial costs, not the costs of the transmission lines, and certainly not the cost of the nearly 100% controllable grid that is needed to support unreliable solar and wind. One popular form of partial cost accounting is to just focus on the declining prices of solar panels, ignoring the massive aforementioned system costs of making the intermittent electricity from solar panels part of a reliable, on-demand electricity system. Additionally, claims involving the declining cost of solar panels engage in extremely dubious projections that these costs will rapidly decline indefinitely, projections that are already starting to come false, as it is revealed that much of declining solar panel prices involve the use of Chinese slave labor and destructive environmental practices and strategic dumping of solar panels at a loss, as well as low-cost electricity from coal and large hydro to make the solar panels. The most egregious example of partial cost accounting to deny the reality of solar and wind is the claim that many areas in digital technologies are already 100% renewable. In reality, every grid in the world uses solar and wind only as a parasite on reliable sources: coal, gas, nuclear, and large-scale hydro, none of which qualify as renewable by most definitions. But Apple, Google, Facebook, and many others claim to be 100% renewable by using a form of energy accounting fraud. Take Apple, a world leader in technology whose statements people understandably trust. For several years now, Apple has been claiming, to great public acclaim, that it uses 100% renewable sources of energy, such as solar and wind, for many of its energy needs, including its data centers. Apple, now globally powered by 100% renewable energy, brags a 2018 press release. When you read such a press release, you understandably think that everything Apple does is directly powered by renewable energy, mostly solar and wind. This is not remotely true. For one thing, Apple, like everyone else, uses oil for transportation energy to ship its finished products, as well as every material at every stage of its vast supply chain. It uses fossil fuels for industrial heat. When Apple says powered by, it is disingenuously referring just to electrical power in order to conceal its use of fossil fuels for transportation and heat. And in the realm of electricity, Apple is nowhere near 100% renewable. That would be completely impossible with today's technology and economics, least of all in China, where most of Apple's manufacturing occurs and where 64% of electricity is from coal. Apple, like nearly every other international technology company in the world, gets most of its electricity from reliable sources such as coal, gas, nuclear, and hydro. How then can Apple claim to be 100% renewable? It purchases a fraudulent 100% renewable status from electricity producers. The basic way this works is that Apple pays utilities to give it credit for the solar and wind that others use, and to give others the blame for the coal, gas, and nuclear that Apple uses. It's as if Apple CEO Tim Cook were traveling with 9 other people on a yacht powered 90% by diesel and 10% by a sail. And Cook claimed that he'd travel just using the sail while the others traveled using the diesel. This energy accounting fraud is shameful and destructive because it leads us to think that we can have innovators like Apple without the uniquely cost-effective energy we get from fossil fuels. Even worse, leading company after leading company, including Facebook, Google, Bank of America, and Anheuser-Busch, is claiming to be 100% renewable. The fact that promises of an amazing solar and wind future involve outright lying about the embarrassing present gives us even more reason to disregard them. Reliance on non-existent economic achievements, such as ultra-cost-effective multi-day electricity storage. The second distortion used to make incredible claims about rapid solar and wind substitution, despite the reality of their problems, is to make up non-existent economic achievements that will rapidly solve these problems. As I discussed in Chapter 5, actually making something work in reality cost-effectively, even if you have a prototype, takes unpredictable, enormous amounts of innovation and implementation. And yet claims of a solar and wind electricity revolution routinely rely on two non-existent economic achievements that don't even work in prototype. These two non-existent economic achievements are the hypothetical alternatives to relying on controllable energy sources that I mentioned earlier. 1. Relying on a diverse, distant, and enormous network of solar panels and wind turbines. 2. Relying on a man-made storage system. The idea of relying on a diverse, distant, and enormous network of solar panels and wind turbines amounts to the sun is always shining somewhere and the wind is always blowing somewhere, so if we build enough long-distance transmission lines, solar panels, and wind turbines, the whole world can always be powered by solar and wind. This is technically true in that there is always enough sunlight and wind on Earth to theoretically power everything, but to attempt to do so is completely cost prohibitive, which is why no one has come close to even trying it. Consider, if you want to rely on non-stored solar and wind for electricity, you need to build many times more solar panels and wind turbines in every region of the world than the region needs, so that each region can bail the others out when its own solar and wind electricity is low. You also need a completely unprecedented global construction of high-powered transmission lines, far beyond anything that has ever actually been achieved. The longer the transmission distances, the more electricity is lost in the process, which means even higher generation requirements. Attempts to do this even partially have been a disaster. Consider the once-touted German Desertec project. The idea was to generate large amounts of solar electricity in the favorable conditions of the Sahara Desert and transport it to European consumers. The initiative had initial support from German industry giants like Siemens and other large institutions like Deutsche Bank. Their vision was to supply up to 20% of European electricity demand with 100 gigawatts of solar capacity built in northern Africa and transmitted via high-voltage direct current transmission infrastructure by 2050. The vision has already been completely abandoned because it was nowhere near cost-effective. The other non-existent economic achievement appealed to in incredible claims about solar and wind's future is relying on a man-made storage system. The basic idea is to build enough solar panels and wind turbines that, when the sun is shining or the wind is blowing, we generate way more electricity than we need, then store the surplus electricity in a giant energy storage system, such as one based on electric batteries. When the sun isn't shining enough and the wind isn't blowing enough, we get our electricity from the storage system. Leaving aside for a moment that this does not account for many of our heating needs and our mobile energy needs, including all the mobile energy needed to mine for and transport the materials and solar panels, wind turbines, and batteries, this is a technically coherent idea. With enough solar panels, wind turbines, batteries, and other infrastructure, such a system could work technically. But remember, the question in energy is not whether something can work technically, but whether it can work economically, whether it can provide energy at low cost, on demand, for billions of people, in thousands of places. Technically, we could provide a private jet for 8 billion people in the world if we had infinite time and other resources. But we don't. In practice, the process of providing private jet travel for everyone would be cost prohibitive to the point that there is literally not enough human time to do it. The same is true for the idea of a self-sufficient solar and wind system that relies on storage. The batteries involved would need to provide all our energy for the days at a time when sunlight and wind are lower than usual, and even the whole seasons when they're lower. Let's be charitable and say you need a week of storage. How close are batteries to being able to do that? If one does some crude math with very, very optimistic near-future battery prices for grid-level storage, $100 per kilowatt hour, the cost of just the batteries to provide 7 days of energy storage for today's global energy use is over $300 trillion every 10 years. Batteries wear out. That's $30 trillion a year, literally more than a third of the entire annual income of the world. Again, the above is incredibly optimistic. Perhaps a more realistic assessment is the one that I shared with Elon Musk in 2021 in response to his claim that we can power the world with just solar panels and some batteries. Running the numbers using Musk's publicly stated megapack battery plus installation prices, I found that even just 3 days' worth of energy storage would run $400 trillion, 4.5 times global GDP. And this is on top of the costs of building enough solar panels, wind turbines, and transmission infrastructure to generate enough electricity to fuel the storage system. On top of the costs of somehow powering all of today's heat and mobility needs via electricity, including the heavy-duty transportation needs, such as cargo ships and airplanes, that don't even have prototypes that just use electricity. Thus, solar and wind replacing fossil fuels isn't a fantastic breakthrough. It's a thoroughly dishonest fantasy, one that is used to advance anti-impact, anti-energy policies.